Welcome to Women in WP,
a bi-monthly podcast about women who blog, design, develop, and more in the WordPress community.
Welcome to the show. I'm Amy Masson.
I'm Angela Bauman.
And I'm Tracy Epps.
And our guest today is Rosalind Page, an award-winning journalist, content writer, and editor with a niche in digital lifestyle, consumer, tech, marketing, and travel, who's worked in the media for nearly 20 years in both London and Sydney. Welcome, Rosalind.
Hi, everyone. Great to be with you.
And we like to start off each episode by asking our guests how they got into WordPress.
Okay. I was probably like a lot of people that dabbled in WordPress and dabbled in blogging when it was sort of first big. Blogging's always big, but it was sort of the first time it was big. So I've had three different blogs depending on what interest I had at the time. So I had a cycling blog called Spokes in the City, and then I had another one which was media related, then I had another one which was the usual kind of blog expression of, you know, daily living. And none of them really sort of, I must admit, they didn't really take hold with me. They're probably like those millions of blogs that kind of languish after your first sort of few posts. Anyway, a couple of years ago, I had left a permanent job and I was freelancing. My family and I realized that I needed to get my personal website out of the late 90s. And so because I was freelancing, I didn't have a huge amount of money to pay a designer and I didn't have a huge amount of work because I was just starting off with a freelance. So I thought, okay, I have to do this myself. And I spent about 10 years writing about consumer technology. So I was fairly au fait with, I had written stories, how-tos on how to create a blog. And, you know, so I thought, I must be able to do this. Surely I can do this. And I did have my own domain. So I had all of those sort of things set up. Anyway, so I spent a week and decided to redesign the website. There were some moments of crying, I have to admit. There was a lot of moments of, you know, swearing and sort of banging the table, but I did get there in the end and it was mostly what I wanted. I did, you know, I bought myself a template and I kind of understood the basics, although, you know, things had changed a bit in terms of like block editors and so on, that I had to kind of get my head around. And then I think it was also a lot of just searching online with YouTube tutorials and things, because it's really about, there's one little piece of information here and there'll be a little piece there and a little how-to there. And sometimes you've got to join the dots. And I think because my background was consumer tech and I had done a lot of writing of tutorials and things and thinking about not assuming knowledge and not assuming that someone enters at the same place you do with how-tos, that I could, you know, I could see the gaps and I realised that I was going to have to try to join those things up when someone says, oh, you know, to link up your Google Analytics or something like that, for example, just go to bar. And you're like, yeah, but hang on, that's actually three steps down the track that assumes that I already know that. And so then I'm like, okay, next tutorial is for that step. Next tutorial is for that. So once I kind of embraced that, I stopped crying so much and kind of went, all right, just see this as gaining useful skills. You know, if I become a full-time freelancer, who knows if I can start a, you know, like a sort of side gig of, you know, WordPress assistants. I know there's lots of people who do that. And so it kind of was more of a big learning curve project and just, yeah, I guess getting those, upskilling yourself.
So you built your website to promote your freelance writing career and you built it all on your own with just Googling and looking in forums and that kind of stuff, tutorials.
Yeah,
have you
mostly
built any websites for anybody else or is it just for your own freelance writing?
Well, I built another one last year. So we moved back to Australia and I took a job writing about marketing and media, which is great. But I also really have a passion for arts and culture. And so my job is part-time and I thought, well, now's the perfect time to create a whole new site for myself. Because I honestly, with the freelancing, sometimes it's a bit disempowering because you're always at the whim of editors and things. So I thought, I'm just going to give myself the job I kind of really want, and I'm just going to be a complete hog and be the editor and be able to do everything and say everything and make every choice that I want, and also own something from start to finish. So yeah, I created a arts and culture blog with a bit of a feminist take as well, because that's another sort of I wouldn't call it a passion interest, but I guess it's a, you know, it's an important project, and I wanted to be able to promote women's writing and, you know, just TV that focuses on women, you know, fairly mainstream. Anyway, so
I
came up with
notes from abroad website.
Yeah. So I came up with some notes from abroad after messaging all my friends going, oh my God, what do you think? Registered the domain and then went from there and set the whole thing up.
It's such a great name of the site too.
Yeah, some notes sort of from abroad.com, just for anybody listening that wants to go check it out.
Oh, like I just got it after, that's
good. Well, I think websites, I think blogs have to have a personality and a point of view. And so I wanted something that would sort of indicate that from the get-go as well, and that we had a bit of a play on words as well. So, and the broad becomes that person that you can talk about in the third person, as I think you can with a blog, because it is something quite different, different to my normal sort of journalism writing.
I really like this latest film and TV post, in praise of slacker chicks on screen. Where do you get your ideas? Like, do you spend a lot of time reading on the internet? Do you just Google things? Where do you come up with this content?
In terms of organizing it, I have a Trello board. So I love Trello. And in my last job, we used it for some of our big projects. So one of the first things I did was make a Trello board. And anything that I've interested in, freelance, whatever it is, I just create a board. And so it's a bit of a brain dump. So it doesn't have to sit, you know, in that bit of the brain that needs to do other things. So I think it's a combination of things. You know, I think it's just reading, watching TV, listening to podcasts. I think it's percolating ideas. I think it's also just the personal side of things, which is why the blog's so nice, is that you kind of see that and you're like, oh yeah, slacker chicks. We need to talk about slacker chicks. In fact, we need to give them a high five, because there needs to be more of that sort of, you know, that depiction of the variety of femaleness. And that's that kind of feminist side. I studied communications at university, so it was all about deconstructing and analysing points of view and representation and so on. And so in some respects, this is a bit of a, you know, a constellation of a lot of those things. I think that's the job of an editor, I think, isn't it? You know, where you've got to just read and watch and sort of have a point of view and have something to say and so something to put forward. And just whenever I'm out and about, if I see something, I'll just save it into the Trello app. Or if I can't do that, I'll just email it to myself. And so then I'll just have sort of topics, like Sucker Chicks was one that I just had going for a while. And I thought, right, what am I going to write about? Yep, it's time to sort of do this. Women's writing rooms, like getting women in the room writing about stories, was another big one. So I might see something and I'm like, oh yeah, okay, that's going to be a post down the track. And so I'm kind of always trying to gather things, because anyone who's done a blog or any type of thing, you just don't want to be having no ideas and no content. So I'm always sort of got sort of ideas percolating in the background. And so I'll just clip things and save things.
It's really great. I had a blog and then I ran out of ideas, or, you know, that kind of thing. So you do like technical stuff and then you do kind of arts and, you know, such. Like what kind of percentage do you do of each, or how does that break down in your writing?
I think in the writing at the moment, I'm probably doing more media and marketing writing, and less sort of consumer tech and tutorials, because I've sort of moved out of that. I do a little bit freelance, but it's more just the sort of marketing and media side of things that I cover in terms of writing. I think in terms of the blog, as anyone who's set anything up knows, that you've got to climb that hill of just joining the dots, and it's just painful. And I also know that you could just basically devote your whole life. You could just fall into the black hole of just it consuming everything. You know, I was obsessed with SEO for a while as well. And, you know, and then I just decided to just let that go because it's just not, it just doesn't suit what I do. So I've got an understanding of it, but I can't obsess about it because I'll just go sort of crazy. And it just, in terms of the actual technical side of things, I think it was for the blog, it was, you know, 95% to begin with. And now it just, it's, you know, it just kind of hums along pretty well. And all the updates and things are so easy to take care of themselves. And it's so much, it's been made so much easier for people to create this presence for themselves on the net, you know, log, you know, linking MailChimp, linking Facebook, setting up a Facebook page, Twitter, Instagram. I mean, it's amazing that you can kind of project yourself or project a site out into the world with not a lot of money and not a huge amount of time and not a massive amount of deep technical knowledge. Like I have a little bit of HTML, but, you know, not a huge amount. But I just, I have the belief that this all works. So I know I can sort of generally figure out the steps to make it work.
I like what you said about like the SEO, because really, if you have content that people want to read, the SEO just kind of follows. So that, you know, that makes, you know, perfect sense. So you've been doing this for quite a while. Have you worked with other systems and like, especially like even WordPress itself from when it, you know, when I first started and it is a, like a completely different beast it is now. What kind of things that you found that were really helpful or things that, I mean, even though I know this is a WordPress, you know, blog, but even if it's something else, like there's another, you know, another service out there that has some cool things. So what kind of things have you seen from that have helped you with your work?
Look, I'd have to say just before I get to that, I'm not a massive fan of Blocks, the Blocks sort of editor. I must say, I just find it just forces a structure that I don't always want. And so it just, and that's just me. Like I'm not a, you know, if this, then that, like I'm not a, I prefer to just be able to do everything myself. So I know that probably makes it easier for some people, but it, to me, it's just an enforced sort of layout and an enforced way of formatting and editing that kind of annoys me a little bit because it's forcing certain things that I don't really like.
It's so, really okay here. This is a safe space.
This is, yes.
You don't have to like the Gutenberg editor.
We're not all Gutenberg not all fans.
It's, yeah. I've been being dragged kicking and screaming because I'm a designer. I feel like that people who are writing shouldn't have to do that. Like that's kind of, you know, the design stuff. Those are extra steps. But I also see, like you're saying, yeah, some people that's helpful for, but not everywhere. So.
Do you find the classic editor? Do you have the classic editor plugin installed so you can stay in the classic editor? Or do you find you're using the classic editor block to put your content in? Or how are you working around that issue?
Look, I pretty much just persevere with the blocks, even though I don't love it. At the moment, I'm just focusing on getting the content in and not doing too much of the behind the scenes technical because I know I'll just fall into a black hole and there'll be hours that have gone by and I've got a plug-in or something else. And so I'm having to be really strict with myself because I've got a sort of permanent part-time job and I've got to sort of limit this or else, yeah, I just look up and it's dark and I'm like, oh my God, I don't know. So I'm just persevering with what I've got and just try to tell myself that it's just a different way that it looks, but you're basically getting the same result and just trying to accept the shortcuts so that it makes available to you, even though it feels like it's channeling me into something that I don't always like. But yeah, I think, I mean, in a previous job, we used Sitecore, which is a, you know, fairly full on CMS.
Oh yeah.
And that was, I mean, it was a bit like Consumer Reports where I worked. It's called Choice. So they do a lot of product testing and things. So thankfully I didn't do the product testing. So I didn't have to get around the really deep technical understanding of loading in like spreadsheets with all sort of product information and so on. I did most of the sort of text-based editing. And it was, but it was okay. I quite liked it. The place I'm at now has their own sort of system, and it's so basic. I'm kind of, it's like, where is it all? It's too simple. You know, when I mentioned SiteCore, they all just kind of went, oh my God, no, we don't have that. So
I love
I think just accept that.
I love that where you said that you just gave yourself the job that you wanted. So my questions are, I have a couple of them. Does that job give you any money, or is it purely for joy?
Yeah, look, it's a love job at the moment. And I do have a Ko-fi sort of sponsor page. That was a sort of second step that I just set up recently. Buy a creative a coffee kind of thing. And so far no one's buying me a coffee, so well bum them. But, you know, I sort of accepted that. And that's why I do limit the time to some extent. And it's why I also just didn't worry about the SEO and trying to build in ads, because I realised that, I'd be a bit of a slave to Google. You know, I did deep dive a bit into the whole kind of travel blogging, and I could just see that on the one hand it looks great, but on the other hand you're just at the mercy of algorithm changes and, you know, coding links with Amazon, and that's just another kind of master that you've got to attend to. So I thought, I just don't owe anybody anything for this. And it's a little bit of a proof of concept in a way of like, can I do this? Can I make it happen? Can see where it goes? And it just might be the love project, and that's okay. It's kind of nice to liberate it from having to make money.
And do you have any other contributors, or are you the only one writing?
I've got a ghostwriter, which is my husband. He's written a couple of things. He hasn't had time because he's a teacher, so he had a bit of a lighter job last year, and so he covered a couple of exhibitions and a couple of films and things. So, and I offered him a byline and he refused. Otherwise it's pretty much me writing everything. I guess the only thing is I do some Q&As with the Creative Women at Work series. But it's, you know, obviously it's my sort of byline, but it's there, you know, they usually write it up. So yeah, again, I'm not being very sharing with it all. I'm just owning it all.
I really love it. I find it super inspiring. And I've always wanted to do that myself, is to just create the job you want, do it, own it, have something that you own and you're not building for clients, and be your own client. And what would I do if I were just to do anything? What keeps you, you've been very dedicated to it and you've kept it going and you have recent articles. It's not like Tracy was saying, you create a blog like I did maybe 6 or 7 years ago, and maybe that was the last time I wrote on it.
I've had a few of those.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you stay motivated?
I have a lot of those.
And what keeps you engaged? Like, what do you find really is in you that makes you want to keep it up?
I think it's a range of things. If it's just that kind of those ones in the past where you start and you let them languish, and you're sort of like, oh, okay, well that didn't go very far. I think I see it a bit like my normal job. So that's why I've got the Trello board. This is pending, this is published, this is scheduled. So it sort of feels like a job. So I kind of, you know, I'm responsible to it. I just really love it too, because I just love sort of, you know, feminist arts and culture and being able to kind of do and say what I want. But sure, the voices start up on a Monday going, oh, another post to write. But I do try and, you know, snuff those voices out and see it as an opportunity, not a chore. But I did take a break over summer. I just put it on hold for a couple of weeks because we just moved back to the house. I've got two children, and I thought, this is okay to just hibernate it for a couple of weeks, just send out a note and I'll be back in 4 weeks. So it isn't, you know, it's not some master that's going to kind of, you know, that I'm going to kind of resent. But I think the key is that sort of Trello board and just feeling like I'm always coming up with ideas, so I don't feel like I'm scrambling. So I do a monthly roundup of TV books and things, so I know that that's a given each month. And so I'm always, you know, slotting stuff away. If I see something, if I watch something on Netflix or whatever it might be. So once I've got lots of things to choose from, it takes away that kind of anxiety about having no concept, having no content. I think it's just, I'm just really invested in it because it's all mine. And it's just sort of strangely liberating because I don't have to answer to anyone for it, because I've answered to editors for a really long time, and that's good. And you need people to feedback on your work as well. But it's
how nice often do you update it? Are you publishing?
Once a week.
Okay.
That's sort of, it's manageable for me with my, with my schedule, because I generally work 3 days a week at the moment. I'm working 4, so then I can start chipping away at the post and then get it all finalized by the end of the week and published. And it feels like it's still current, but it's not so much that I'm just stressed out because I've got, you know, I've set myself a target too high and it's just not feasible. And just one other thing I would say, I actually tell people, yeah, there's a lot of things about people writing for nothing, you know, like freelance writers don't get paid very much, especially like creative writing. And so now I feel I can say to people, just do it yourself. You know, I'm in a women's like creative writing group, and someone was complaining that, and rightly so, they're invited to contribute to a website and some of their creative writing work, which they wouldn't be paid for. But then they had to take out an ad in order to qualify. And so they had to pay several hundred dollars for the ad. And so this woman was saying, what do you think? And people were like, that kind of stinks. And so I was able to say, honestly, if you just get a low-level domain and the hosting and a bunch of other things for a quarter of that, you could set it up. And if you're going to write for free, why not just write for yourself for free and promote it and own it and have something that's all yours? And I think maybe it's that female thing as well, as not thinking that you have to have permission from someone else or there's some gatekeeper. It's sort of like shifting, it's kind of flipping that a bit and actually having the ownership yourself of things. That I think, yeah, important, and that's really good. And women need to, there needs to just be a variety of women's voices in all domains. So I think these kind of platforms just really allow that.
Yeah, you're kind of speaking like a true writer, you know, that you are a writer and this is your platform. And so you've chosen a topic and topics that interest you, so you want to write about them, and that it's just the act of writing itself and putting it out there that has its own fulfillment for you. And I like that you're giving yourself assignments every week so that it, you do have focus and it doesn't just kind of get away from you. And every writer will say that, right? You need to, you know, you need to commit to a certain amount of time, or I think it helps in a way that it's a passion project, and you're creating a room of your own there.
Yeah, I also realized for me, doing a kind of personal blog just wasn't something I could do. And I think it's good that people do, but I just, you know, the little imposter voice in my head just is not going to allow that. You know, I just can't put that stuff out there. So I think this was bad enough. You know, I had to kind of put the imposter in the box and, you know, tape it up. But I didn't want it to be too personalized. I wanted to sort of take the journalism side of things that I have, and so to make it and I think that's kind of blog 2.0 a bit, which is actually about you, the reader. I'm providing something for you, as opposed to I'm just telling you how I feel and what I think. And look, I think that's good. It's not the thing that I could do, because I just can't reveal all that stuff out onto the web. But yeah, I wanted it to very much be about any kind of what would look like an editorial type of platform. It has a point of view though.
Hi, Women in WP listeners. This is Angela with a quick note from our sponsor, Malcare. The thing I like most about Malkare is how simple it is to use. Unlike other security plugins that have an array of confusing options that you have to figure out whether or not to turn on and if they will break your site, is you simply install and activate Malkare. That's it. It blocks brute force attacks to your site instantly and protects your site with a firewall. Regular security plugins are quite resource intensive because if they provide any sort of scanning, the scanning happens directly on your hosting server, which can really slow down your site. Malkare, on the other hand, copies your site encrypted to their dedicated cloud servers, so all of the scanning processes occur in the cloud, ensuring that Malkare never impacts the performance of your site. Malkare's regular, deep, clean scanning of your files and database can dynamically detect even the most complex malware. This ensures that you're the first to know if your site or client's site has been hacked. Using Malkare's one-click instant removal tool makes your site malware-free in minutes at a fraction of the price of other security services. To get started with Malkare and take advantage of their expert team of security support, please visit malkare.com/womeninwp for 10% off your first year of protection, or see the show notes for a link. Now back to the show.
So I love, because we all talk about the imposter syndrome, and so yeah. Well, and it's interesting, and you are it says you're an award-winning journalist, right? So like, it's funny because like people are like, oh well, I'm just self-taught, or I don't have anything, you know, anything to my name or whatever, but I like the fact putting your imposter syndrome in a box and taking it out. So I mean, because that's been a recurring theme with all of us, like, what are some of your tips that to help others to do the same?
Yeah, I think it's really important, especially for women, to know that that exists, and that sometimes you think it's just self-doubt and a little bit of concern, and you, actually the imposter syndrome or the imposter takes many different forms. And I think once you start to realize that, it can be a bit disconcerting, because you realize those things can hold you back and you're like, oh god, if I'd seen the imposter 20 years ago, maybe I could. I'm like, oh okay, just don't go there. It's better to see it now. And there is that conversation, you know, people can put it out there into the world, that you see people who look really accomplished and you're like, what, you've got an imposter too? And you realize that everyone, generally speaking, is fighting that imposter voice. And I think you've got to recognize it. And unfortunately, I think you've got to recognize that it comes in many different guises. And it's always good to question yourself, and it's good to reflect on yourself. And, you know, no one wants to become a, you know, arrangement, and then there's imposter. So I think it's talking about it openly, like there's a, you know, that it's a thing. And I think that's really useful for other people to share it and go, oh my God, everyone's actually dealing with that all the time. And that, you know, that kind of LinkedIn image that you can project is just the polished version, and inside is the questioning, unsure person that's struggling with whatever manifestation the imposter takes, whether it's the parent who criticized you, or just the kids who made fun of you, or just your own stuff that you've invented about, I'm not good enough, why would people want to hear from me? And so I think it's also useful to create an alternative narrative. So when it comes up and says, well, why would anyone hear from you? It's like, well, maybe they will. If they don't, they don't need to. But there'll be those people out there who will resonate with. And so you spend some time on those things, and then other times I think it's just saying, I'm going ahead anyway, imposter, and you're going to just have to deal with it. And sometimes it is quite hard. You do have to really override that kind of imposter voice that wants to come along and tell you you're not good enough, or tell you this isn't worthy, or it's hopeless, or it's all the kind of negatives. So, yeah, that's, yeah.
Do you think that women struggle with imposter syndrome more than men?
Yeah, I do, pretty much. I mean, I know some men do more than others, and they don't.
I agree. I think they do. I think they do too. And I just wonder why that is. Why is it that we're so much more prone to discount our skills and not believe our worth than men?
I just really want to say, like, patriarchy, and those kind of systems that they're not always obvious. It's like, oh, I went to a good school and, you know, my parents were happy for me to do things, you know, that's all fine. But it's, I think patriarchy still exists in that sense of think of having to fight against that voice, and you have to work that bit harder, or you have to overcome more negative voices to find a space. And I look, and I think you only have to look around at some women who are, you know, who do have a big presence, and just see the amount of crap that can be thrown at them to recognize that there's a, you know, that some of that stuff, those fears are quite real, because, you know, it can be brutal for women to fully put themselves forward in those kind of public domains. So I think it's systemic, and then it's just, I think a lot of women just internalise those messages that you get from when you're quite young. And I think it's trying to understand that to the best of your ability without, you know, being in therapy all day and trying to counter some of that and just work against it. And being, I think, role models and just being kind and generous to other women so they don't think, oh, she's got it all together, hasn't she? You know, it's like a friend of mine asked me to do a post on the blog on imposter syndrome a few months ago, the last time we could go out, because we're talking about this, and she's, oh, you do this and you do that. And I'm like, yeah, but I only do it because, like, I force myself to do it. So I force myself to get over those kind of negative voices that would stop you. So I'm still, it's a Trello card, imposter syndrome, to figure out what to do about it. I looked it up and I couldn't find any movies or books or that kind of fit the realm, but it's sitting there in the research sort of section of the Trello board.
I love it. Well, if it helps, I remember an episode of Growing Pains back from the 80s where Carol Seaver had imposter syndrome. So you could use that in your post. And, you know, I could probably even find you a YouTube clip.
Okay, I'm going to look up Growing Pains, and I'll take the link and stick it on the card, and it's now on, it started.
You know, you bring up the patriarchy and that kind of thing, and my thing that I've noticed is, well, when things are assumed as the norm, and, you know, and then you're fighting against that when, it, like you're saying, like you're internalizing it, I do user experience, and all of the time, so we all talk about the user, and so the conversations I've had with people, and they talk about, oh, well, this is, they're literally like, oh, and then he is going to do this, and then he'll do this, and whatever, and all of the personas that are usually defaulted to are like John, Matt, you know, like all men, I mean, especially when we talk about like in the technical world, and which is, so I always enjoy kind of fighting against that. But I've always loved fighting against that kind of stuff. But like, or in the talk, in the calls with these developers and people that very much are talking about like, oh, he, this, the user is he and this and everything. And I'm like, okay, and then what if she does this and then this? And then it's funny, cause like I've been watching that while, I mean, granted, these are all just conference calls, and I can hear them now starting to adjust their language around it because I keep pushing at it.
Mm. Yeah, they're little sort of micro kind of revolts, aren't they? Or little micro awarenesses. And I think that's really important. Just to,
I like that. That should be my band name.
Yeah. That's right. I'm reading that. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called Invisible Women. It's about the data bias. I did a couple of weeks ago. It's by an English woman who has done this wonderful book all about the data that's missing on women. And it's that thing of like assuming that the male is sort of the default without even actually kind of noting it. It's just, it begins and goes from there. And so some of it's just like amusing, and some of it's actually life-threatening, because they do research based on, say, male bodies and how they respond to heart attacks. Women's respond differently. crash test dummies were made in the form of males. They weren't made in the form of women. So seatbelts may not have been as safe for women as for men. I'm obsessed about with it, and I'm just telling everyone about it because it gives the data to that notion of, you know, the male point of view is the dominant one, but it's the kind of original one, and that women either don't exist or they're the second, you know, it's the original kind of feminist argument about women being secondary or other. And it's that thing about, and I know that we're actually moving on from the binary as well, but I think we just have to put that aside as well for now to say, we also need to just deal with this as well. And then we'll get further down the non-binary. And I think that's also important as well. But I think we have to establish the binary sort of bias that exists. And it's that stuff. It's that thing of like, well, if it's all men in the room, they just say he, and they just assume that it's a male. And there's all these decisions that are made that don't necessarily suit the woman's point of view or the woman's experience or whatever it might be.
I think Caroline Perez, who wrote Invisible Women, I think she was just on the 99% Invisible podcast recently. Are you familiar with that podcast?
I am not, but I am going to have to find out. Yes. And that is going on the blog.
And I think Tracy would love it too. So 99% Invisible is about the invisible things in our built world primarily, but it also could be in the natural world that affect us. And so they did a whole episode on design and just what you and Tracy were saying about women just being considered maybe smaller men or something, you know, like in all the medical studies, and how even with public transportation being designed around men. So I think you'll appreciate that episode a lot. It's amazing because this has been your passion, this whole blog and all of these topics that we've spent most of our time talking about it because it's probably it's so interesting. I'm curious about your business work when you do work for clients. Are you primarily doing marketing writing or other kinds of content writing? And is that within a WordPress kind of area, or is it for other collateral material? I guess what would be my question around that is, do you have any words of wisdom from that standpoint for people who are needing to, like, let's say, write copy for their websites? It's hard, and Amy knows it's hard, and you know, it's like pulling teeth. And if you could speak to that would be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think most of the freelance that I do, it tends to be freelance content marketing writing, so those sort of thought leadership pieces, blogs, articles. In my previous job, we did writing for the web and I did writing for UX, so it was very much about thinking differently about writing website copy. I think, you know, it's changed a bit. There was that sort of belief that everything had to be short, and I had to have dot points, and you couldn't write anything, you know, very useful below the fold, and, you know, people wanted to get on and get off. And I see that that's changed now, that there are sort of rules have been relaxed a bit, and there is this sense that actually the world still needs to have a certain structure, you know, it still needs to have subheads that are fairly explanatory, not the sort of ones that you tend to see in, say, magazines that would have all those puns and things. I worked as a sub-editor on a food and travel magazine, and everyone just spent their day coming up with puns. That doesn't really, it doesn't work. So it's sort of, you know, it's good that some of that's been relaxed, because for a while all I did was just try to put paragraphs into dot points. And, you know, it's annoying. And it just, you know, you lose the niceness of writing. And I think that's where, like, if you're using like Yoast or something like that, I think you've got to ignore some of those red traffic lights that tell you, you know, everything that's wrong with your content. Some of it's useful, like being aware of the passive voice, you know, but just, you know, overly obsessing about, you know, my sentences of more than 20 words and they're more complex and they should, than this thing should be. You know, thankfully we moved away from, yeah, sort of writing for bots trawling our pages, and we are writing more for people who, there is a pleasure in a longer sentence. There is a pleasure in having commas and having sub phrases and getting to the point in the second part of the sentence. And, you know, not everything has to just be, you know, linked, and I don't have to have the keyword 57 times. But I suppose it's horses for courses a little bit. If you want that site that's going to send the right signals to the Google gods, then I guess you've got to follow those. But on the other hand, you know, the Google gods keep tinkering with things. So what are you going to do? You know, you're going to run back and start at sort of, you know, position zero and tweak everything.
Well, they do tinker with things, but the one thing that remains solid always is great content.
Well, they've actually, they've sort of led that too, because they're saying we actually have to have content that they've realized that those, you know, strict rules, people could then, you know, play the system by keyword jamming and, you know, all the kind of, you know, filling of links and things. And so they have realized that, you know, it actually hurts their business, because people just get onto something and realize it's just kind of horrible keyword clickbaity stuff and jump right off it. So they have sort of, that's right, they have signaled that, you know, they've got their, you know, their kind of parameters that they want people to write content that's useful, that answers questions, that's helpful to people, and actually written for human beings. And so that's good.
Yeah, I feel like that's actually kind of I've noticed that trend too, but like, and I hope that continues, especially being in user experience, because we relate to stories. And so stories may not be Google juice rich, but, you know, well, who knows, like with all of the machine learning and AI technology, like how much more will that be, you know, helpful or whatever. But if you're looking for, if you're doing something for marketing, you're doing something that you want to actually have human clients and customers, then writing for humans, I feel like. I've so many websites have been like, lawn care, did you need to get your grass cut in Brown Deer, Wisconsin, or your trees trimmed in Brown Deer, Wisconsin? I'm like, I've just clicked no, forget it. I know what you're doing. And people are getting wise to that.
Mm.
It's like you're a true writer, and we could write a blog post called "Rescuing Your Content from the Bots."
Yeah, that's right. Now that I'm sort of writing from within marketing, I see that I think a lot of those brands do seem to realize that they do actually have to connect with people, and that just, and I think everyone went mad, you know, I think brands and marketers went mad. I think editorial did too, because I was there as well. It was all just about traffic from Google. And then they realized that it doesn't, unless you're running those kind of headiest sort of ads where you get, you know, half a cent when you get traffic, it doesn't actually help your business, because you actually need the people coming to your site who have some interest or need, not just traffic en masse. And so I think that has helped to dial down some of that spammy stuff from the marketing side. And I see it in editorial as well. It's dialed down that kind of over SEO, kind of obsessing about things and just writing a story on this and that just to pull the traffic in.
Well, I tell people that all the time when it's talking about SEO, is it's not about more traffic, it's about the right traffic.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think that it does seem to, the message seems to get out there.
I think we're seeing that more. I think more people are writing good content versus, you know, keyword content. And you can do both. And I also do plenty of posts where I'm trying to do both, but I can't make every blog post that I write about a keyword. And yeah. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, Exactly. I tried that, and it was just to see what it would be like and to see if it would gain traction. But I think it requires a whole site rather than just doing it on individual things. But it's just a lot of people just ran to that. And so it became a lot harder to grab the keywords. And so then it, you know, people then looked for keywords that weren't always related because they had lower competition. And yeah, it's another black hole that you can fall into too far. But having said that, it's obviously really important to understand those SEO principles and to know how to use them and to know how to try to write something for a human being and then to do a, you know, a sort of a keyword layer edit that does a, you know, a sort of a sensitive or a soft edit with that.
Yeah, you are my hero on so many levels. You are following your passion, you're writing authentic content, you're, you know, just speaking the truth, you know, of authenticity on so many levels. And it's just been such a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much for being with us today. Before we go, can you tell our listeners where they can find you online?
Okay, right. My website, just for me personally, is rosalindpage.com. Come to the blog, somenotesfromabroad.com. And then from there, you can find the social links. There's Instagram and Twitter and a Facebook page.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for listening. Interested in being on the show? Sign up on our website, womeninwp.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and join our Facebook group to have conversations with other women in WordPress.